Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to Europe. Europe is home to some of the greatest fairy tales we have today. Hans Christian Andersen, the Brothers Grimm, are two of the most famous. But there are many other tales from which I have chosen some of this week's selections. Many countries make up what is Europe today. There are 27. But in the ancient past, there were tribes, Germanic, Franks, and others, who carved out a unique culture. It was cold and snowy in the northern parts, so some of the stories deal with legends of snow queens and snow goblins. This is also a part of the world where trolls were part of local beliefs. If you'd like further information for children, I suggest you visit ducksters.com. So we start today with a little-known tale by one of the most famous of European storytellers, the Brothers Grimm. Here is Old Mother Frost. There once lived an old widow who had a daughter and a stepdaughter. Her stepdaughter was beautiful and hard-working, ever willing to do whatever was asked of her, little and large tasks, and she was always kind to everybody, including her mother and stepsister. The stepsister now was rather plain-looking. She was lazy and deceitful and was always complaining to her mother about how her stepsister did not work hard enough, burned her toast, and did not wash her dresses properly. The stepdaughter was made to sleep on a rough bed in the washing room, and for food, she was only given leftovers and dry bread crusts. The poor stepdaughter was made to work on a spinning wheel put outside next to a well. She worked so hard and spun so fast that her fingers started to bleed. The girl bent over the well to wash the spindle off. She was afraid the blood might discolor the yarn she was spinning, but she dropped the spindle and it fell into the water. She did not want to be scolded for losing the spindle, so without thinking about the consequences, she hitched her skirt and jumped into the water in order to retrieve it. But she could not feel the ground at the bottom. She kept sinking deeper and deeper, and at the bottom of the well, she found herself in a charming meadow covered in the greenest grass and a multitude of colorful flowers, all under a friendly sun spreading its warmth. So she got up, and as she was naturally quite curious, she decided to take a walk and get to know her new surroundings. Before long, she arrived at a bakery with an oven full of bread. The bread was crying out, "Draw me out! Draw me out! We have baked long enough! If you don't draw us out, we shall surely burn and be of no use to anybody." So the girl looked around and found the bread peel, a long stick with a broad flat end, which she had seen bakers use to pull bread out of the oven. She started working slowly at first because she was not used to this kind of work, but eventually she got the hang of it, and before long she had emptied the oven and all the bread had been placed on racks cooling off. The work had made her hungry, and when one of the loaves invited her to have a taste, she did not hesitate. She took one of the loaves and, munching it, continued on her walk. Before long, she came across an apple tree, whose branches were almost touching the ground, so heavily laden were they with fruit. The apples cried out, "Shake the tree, shake the tree! We are all ripe, and we need to come off our tree, otherwise we will all rot away. Shake the tree!" So the girl, conscientious as ever, started shaking the tree with all her might. She shook for as long as it took for all the apples to fall down. Then she proceeded to collect them all and put them neatly in a big heap. "Well done!" the apples shouted. "Take one of us to munch on. You'll find we taste pretty good." So the girl took an apple from the top of the pile, polished it on her frock before biting into the juicy fruit. On she went on her walk. Before long, she came to a clearing where there stood a small cottage, and in front of the cottage stood an old woman. The old woman was, frankly, quite a sight. She was as ugly as any creature from the land of ghouls. Her teeth were too long and grew over her lips. Her nose was covered in gray hairs. Our young girl was somewhat taken aback by this apparition, and her impulse was to turn around and get out of there. Anything was better than this old hag. But just then the old woman cried out a greeting, and her voice was much friendlier than her appearance. "What are you afraid of, little girl? Don't run away. No harm will come to you here. Come and have a chat." So the girl and the ugly old woman sat down together on a bench in front of the cottage. The old woman asked her how she came to her cottage and where she was heading. The girl explained what had happened to her, from jumping into the well to find her spindle, waking up in the meadow and meeting the bread loaves and the ripe apples. "I really don't know where I'm going," she said. "I hadn't really given it much thought." "Well, then," said the old lady, "why don't you stay here for a while? You can help me tidy up my place. You seem to have a talent for that. If you can do that, all will go well with you. I will see to that." "What would I have to do?" asked the girl. The woman smiled a crooked smile. "I am Old Mother Frost," she said. "The main job is to shake my bed thoroughly so that all the feathers fly out. They will float down to the world and turn into snow." The girl quite liked the sound of that. The old lady seemed very kind, in spite of her rather rough appearance, and she had certainly enjoyed the taste of the bread and the apples. So she readily agreed to stay for a while. She worked hard, as that was her nature, and always shook the bed with the utmost vigor, so that there was so much snow on earth that life came to a standstill. Old Mother Frost looked after her very well, fed her fresh fruit and roast meat every day, and she was able to sleep on a wonderful soft mattress, and she never had to do any spinning. Her life was very happy, and there were never any angry words between her and Old Mother Frost. But in spite of her wonderful life here, she eventually started feeling sad, and after a while she realized she was homesick. So she sat down with Old Mother Frost one day and told her that she wanted to go back to see her stepmother and sister. "If I find it does not go so well down there, maybe I can come back here," she said. Old Mother Frost agreed. "I can tell you that you've been a little homesick these last few days," she said. "It shows in your face, my dear girl. Of course you can go back, and I will keep an eye on you from here. When I see that you are suffering, I will come to fetch you myself, for I have grown very fond of you indeed." So the next day, Old Mother Frost took her hand and led her down a path which led to a great wooden gate which she unlocked. The old lady gave her the spindle which she had lost in the well. "You must take this back," she said. And then she gave her a large bag filled with gold. "And this," she added, "you have deserved this through your hard work." She then guided her through the gate, and when the girl had passed through it, locked it again. When the girl looked around, to her surprise, she found herself on a path leading to her stepmother's house. She followed the path, and a little later was greeted by the cockerel, the chickens, and the cat, who had all sorely missed her. She went in to see her mother, and because she had a bag full of gold, she was very warmly received. The girl told the story of everything that had happened to her, and how Old Mother Frost had rewarded her with a bag of gold. When the stepmother heard this story, she told her daughter that she too should try her luck and travel to the meadow where Old Mother Frost dwelt, so she too would get a bag full of gold. The lazy daughter was not all that keen, and it sounded like a lot of hard work to her, but her mother's greed was too strong, and this time she did not take no for an answer, and made her daughter sit down by the side of the well, drop the spindle in it, and jump after it. And so it happened that the lazy daughter sank deeper and deeper until eventually she found herself in a charming meadow covered in the greenest grass and a multitude of colorful flowers, all under a friendly sun spreading its warmth. She got up, and as she tried to remember what her stepsister had told her, she started to walk. Before long, she arrived at a bakery with an oven full of bread. The bread was crying out, "Draw me out! Draw me out! We have baked long enough. If you don't draw us out, we shall surely burn and be of no use to anybody." But the lazy daughter was not interested in dirtying herself rescuing the bread. "It's nothing to do with me," she said. "I did not put you in the oven. Get yourselves out if you're so hot." With this, she continued on her walk. Before long, she came across an apple tree, whose branches were almost touching the ground, so heavily laden were they with fruit. The apples cried out, "Shake the tree, shake the tree! We are all ripe, and we need to carry off our tree and fall down, otherwise we will all rot away. Shake the tree!" But the lazy daughter just shook her head. "I'm not going to exhaust myself for a bunch of sour apples," she said. "Shake yourself down if you're so clever." On she went on her walk. Before long, she came to a clearing where there stood a small cottage, and in front of the cottage stood an old woman. As her stepsister had explained, the old woman was frankly quite a sight. She was as ugly as any creature from the land of ghouls. Her teeth were too long and grew over her lips, and her nose was covered in gray hairs. But the lazy daughter was not afraid, having been warned. "So you must be Old Mother Frost," she said. Old Mother Frost confirmed that she was indeed her, and asked this new girl why she had come this way and where she was going. "I've come to give you a hand with some of your work," the lazy daughter told her. "That's very good," said Old Mother Frost. "I can do with some help. My old bones are not getting any younger." So the lazy daughter started working for Old Mother Frost. Well, she worked quite well on the first day, but by evening she was so tired she had hardly enough energy left to eat the wonderful food that had been prepared. So the next day she slowed down a bit and only shook the bed in a perfunctory manner, so that only a few of the feathers flew out. Not much snow fell on the earth that day. The next day she did even less, but Old Mother Frost did not complain. But the next day the lazy daughter stayed in her bed until midday, and when she got up, complained that there was no breakfast waiting for her. That was it for Old Mother Frost. "I've had it enough of you," she said. "I'm giving you the sack. You'll have to go back to where you came from." The lazy daughter was, of course, very happy to hear these words, because she thought she would now get her sack full of gold. Old Mother Frost took her by the arm and led her to the great wooden gate, which she duly unlocked. "Just step through there," she said, "and you will return to your mother's village." Just as the lazy daughter, stepping through the gate, thought she was going to be handed her gold, Old Mother Frost picked up a bucket standing by the gate and poured the contents all over the wretched girl. It was filled with purple dye from the Tyrolean snail, which covered her all over. When the lazy daughter got home, however much she tried and her mother tried to wash it off, they could not remove it, and so she was purple for the rest of her life. You are listening to Gima's Tales for Children on KCIWLP 100.7 in Brookings, Oregon. Europe seems to be full of stories of princes and princesses. Here's one. It's called Prince Kind-Hearted. Once upon a time, there lived a king who had but one son, and he was called the Kind-Hearted. When the prince was 20 years old, he asked the king, his father, to let him go traveling. His father fitted him out for the journey, gave him a true servant to guard him and his fatherly blessing. The prince took leave of his father, mounted a brave steed, and went to different countries to see God's world, to learn many things, and to return home a wiser and a better man. Once, when the prince was slowly riding through a silent field, he suddenly perceived an eagle in pursuit of a swan. The white swan was almost caught by the eagle's sharp claws when the prince, carefully aiming, fired his pistol. The eagle fell dead, and the happy swan came down and said, "Prince Kind-Hearted, I thank you for your help. It is not a swan that is thanking you, but the enchanted daughter of the Knight Invisible. You have not saved me from an eagle's claws, but from the terrible magician, King Corshay. My father will pay you well for your services. Remember, whenever you are in need, to say three times, 'Knight Invisible, come to my help.'" The swan flew away as soon as it had finished speaking, and the prince looked after it, then continued his journey. He crossed many high mountains, traversed deep rivers, passed through foreign countries, and at last he came to a great desert, where there was nothing to see but sky and sand. No man lived there. No animal's voice was ever heard. No vegetable ever grew there. The sun was shining so brightly and burning so terribly that all the rivers were dried up. Their beds were lost in the sand, and there was not a drop of water anywhere. The young prince, anxious to go everywhere and see everything, and not noticing how dry things were, kept going farther and farther and deeper into the desert. But after a while, he became terribly thirsty. In order to find some water, he sent his servant in one direction, and he himself went in another. After a while, he succeeded in finding a well. He called to his servant, "I have found a means of getting some water," and they both were happy. But their happiness did not last, for the well was very deep, and they had nothing with which to reach the water. The prince said to the servant, "Dismount. I will let you down the well by some long ropes, and you shall draw up some water." "No, my prince," answered the servant. "I am much heavier than you are, and your majesty's hands will not be able to hold me. You take hold of the ropes, and I will let you down into the well." The prince, the ropes tied around him, went down into the well, drank the cold water, and taking some of it for the servant, pulled the ropes as a sign for the servant to draw him up again. But instead of pulling him up, the servant said, "Listen, you kingly son, from your cradle days until now, you have lived a happy life, surrounded by luxury and love, and I have always led the life of a miserable wretch. Now you must agree to become my servant, and I will be the prince instead of you. If you will not exchange, say your last prayer, for I am going to drown you."
"Do not drown me, my true servant. You will not gain anything by it. You will never find such a good master as I am, and you know what a murderer may expect in the next world."
"Let me suffer in the next world, but I will make you suffer in this one," answered the servant, and he began to loosen the ropes.
"Stop," cried the prince.
"I will be thy servant, and you shall be the prince. I will give you my word for it."
"I do not believe your word. Swear that you will write down what you promise me now, for words are lost in the air, and writing always remains as a testimony against us."
"I swear." The servant let down into the well a sheet of paper and a pencil, and told the prince to write the following: "The bearer of this is Prince Kindhearted, traveling with his servant, a subject of his father's kingdom." The servant glanced over the note, pulled the prince out of the well, gave him his shabby clothes, and put on the prince's rich dress. Then, having changed armor and horses, they went on. In a week or so, they came to the capital of a certain kingdom. When they approached the palace, the false prince gave his horse to the false servant and told him to go to the stable, and he himself went straight into the throne chamber and said to the king, "I come to you to ask for the hand of your daughter, whose beauty and wisdom are known all over the world. If you consent, you will have our favor. If not, we will decide it by war."
"You do not speak to me in a nice way at all, not as a prince ought to speak, but it may be that in your country you are not used to better manners. Now listen to me, my future son-in-law. My kingdom is now in the hands of an enemy of mine. His troops have captured my best soldiers, and now they are approaching my capital. If you will clear my kingdom from these troops, my daughter's hand will be yours as a reward."
"All right," answered the false prince. "I will drive your enemies away. Do not worry if they come to the capital. Tomorrow morning, not one enemy will be left in your land." In the evening, he went out of the palace, called his servant, and said to him, "Listen, go out to the city walls, drive away the foreign troops, and for this service, I will return to you your note by which you denied your kingdom and swore to be my servant." The honest Prince Kindhearted put on his knightly armor, mounted his steed, went out to the city walls, and called in a loud voice, "Knight Invisible, come to my help."
"Here I am," said Knight Invisible. "What do you wish me to do for you? I am ready to do everything for you, because you saved my child from the terrible King Corshay."
Prince Kindhearted showed him the troops, and the Knight Invisible whistled loudly and called, "Oh, you, my wise horse, come to me quickly.
There was a rustling in the air. It thundered. The earth trembled, and a wonderful horse appeared, having a golden mane. From his nostrils a fire was burning. From his eyes bright sparks were flying, and from his ears thick clouds of smoke were coming. Night Invisible jumped upon the horse and said to the prince, "Take this magic sword and attack the troops from the left, and I, upon my golden maned horse, will attack them from the right." They both attacked the army. From the left, the soldiers were falling like wood. From the right, like whole forests. In less than an hour, the entire army vanished. Some of them remained upon the spot, dead. Some of them fled. Prince Kindhearted and the Knight Invisible met upon the battlefield, shook hands in a friendly way, and in a minute, the Knight Invisible and his horse turned into a bright red flame, then into thick smoke, which disappeared in the darkness. The prince returned quietly to the palace. The young princess felt very sad that evening. She could not sleep, and so leaned out of her window when she overheard the conversation between the prince and the servant. Then she saw what was going on behind the city walls. She also saw the Knight Invisible disappear in the darkness, and Prince Kindhearted return to the palace. She saw the false prince coming out of the palace, taking the knightly armor from the servant, and Prince Kindhearted entering the stable to rest. The next morning, the old king, seeing his land freed from the enemies, felt very happy and gave the prince many rich presents. But when he announced the engagement of his daughter to him, she stood up, took the hand of the real prince, who helped to serve at the table, led him before the old king, and said, "My dearest father and king, and all you that are present here, this man is my bridegroom, sent to me by God, for he is your savior and the real prince. And that one who calls himself a prince is a traitor, a false and dishonest man." Then the princess told everything she knew and said, "Let him show some proof that he really is a prince." The false prince gave to the king the note which was given to him in the well. The king opened it and read aloud, "The bearer of this note, the false and untrue servant of Prince Kindhearted, asks for pardon and expects a just punishment." The note was given to him in the well by Prince Kindhearted. "Is it really so?" cried the wretch, and he became pale as death. "Yes, read it yourself if you do not believe it," answered the king. "I can't read," said the poor fellow. He knelt before his master and begged for mercy, but he received what he deserved. Prince Kindhearted and the princess were happily married, and I was present at the wedding feast and also felt quite happy. Our last story today takes us to the Azores off of Portugal. It's a folk tale that explains why dogs like to sniff each other when they meet. Here is Why Dogs Sniff. Once upon a time, the dogs gave a dinner party. All the dogs were invited, and all the dogs accepted the invitation. There were big dogs and little dogs and middle-sized dogs. There were black dogs and white dogs and brown dogs and gray dogs and yellow dogs and spotted dogs. There were dogs with long tails and dogs with short tails and dogs with no tails at all. There were dogs with little sharp pointed ears and dogs with big flat drooping ears. There were dogs with long slender noses and dogs with short fat turnip noses. All these dogs came to the party. Now the dinner was a most elaborate affair. Everything had been arranged with the utmost care. All the good things to eat were spread out upon the rocks by the sea. A gay, sparkling little brook brought water to drink. The sun was shining brightly, and a soft, gentle little breeze was blowing. Everything seemed absolutely perfect. But there was a cross, fussy old dog who came to the party. She was a yellow dog, they say. Nothing ever suited her. Whenever she went to a party, she always found fault with something. Sometimes there was too little to eat, and sometimes there was too much. Sometimes the hot things were not hot enough, and sometimes the cold things were not cold enough. Sometimes the hot things were so hot they burned her mouth, and the cold things so cold that they gave her indigestion. There was always something wrong. At this party, however, there was not too much to eat, and there was not too much little to eat. The hot things were all just hot enough, and the cold things were all just cold enough. Everything seemed to be exactly as it should be.
How good everything tastes, remarked the big black dog between polite mouthfuls.
Everything is seasoned exactly right, added the black and white spotted dog between mouthfuls, which were entirely too large to be polite.
That was an unfortunate remark. The cross, fussy yellow dog heard it. She noticed immediately that the big juicy bone she was eating had not been seasoned with pepper.
Will somebody please pass the pepper? She asked.
All the black dogs and white dogs and brown dogs and yellow dogs and gray dogs and spotted dogs fell over each other trying to find the pepper to pass. There was not a single bit of pepper at that dinner party.
I can't eat a mouthful until I have some pepper, whined the yellow dog.
I'll go into the city and get some pepper, said one of the dogs. Nobody ever knew which dog it was. The dog who went into the city to get the pepper never came back. Nobody ever knew what became of him. And that is why, to this day, whenever two dogs meet, they always sniff at each other. If one of them should happen to be the dog who went into the city to get the pepper, he would surely smell of pepper.
So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write to me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to the great Down Under, the continent of Australia. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIWLP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon.
Thank you for listening to Curry Coast Community Radio, your community-supported radio station. If you like this program and want to hear more like it, consider supporting Curry Coast Community Radio by volunteering your time or contributing to our capital campaign. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org.